Hello and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Mabbitt, and welcome you to episode 14 and part 3 of my conversation with Mason Keifel, the senior pastor at North Point Presbyterian Church. Mason and I wrap up our conversation, our long conversation today about family worship. And in today's episode, we continue our discussion of catechism and how to use catechism in family worship as a useful part of your family worship. We also touch on what it's like dealing with different age groups in family worship, and sometimes how do you involve maybe some of the upper elementary age kids into that. And we also talk about frequency and how long a family worship session should be. And I also give my, personally, what I think is the most important piece of advice about family worship. And then we also talk about the importance and the value of singing together. And wrap it up with, share some personal stories, Mason and I both do, about family worship in our home and what that's looked like for better or for worse. And the very, very last thing we do is we share some resources that you can go and find, and be putting those links in the description for books and resources. But we're really trying to keep it simple, really trying to keep it practical. So I hope you've enjoyed part one and part two, and that you enjoy the end of this conversation about family worship. And thanks for listening.
And I really loved how you were talking about, because it's a resource where, you know, how many parents at some point get asked, well, what is God?
Right.
Right. And then, and we're just like, he's in heaven. He made everything. And it's just like, if I go ask my kids, what is God? And say, God is a spirit and does not have a body like men. You know?
Oh,
like,
man. Yeah.
And so,
my kids love saying it.
Yeah. And so it's now one of the keys though, is that some people who have an experience with catechism, or they hear this and they think this, they go, ugh.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of memory work. You got
Roman Catholic.
You got to toe the line, legalistic, say the words. And I'm like, you know what? Unfortunately, catechism has often been approached that way.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And there's a great book when we do our episode on catechism that I'll recommend, but I don't remember the guy's, he has a very complicated last name. And I don't remember it exactly, but it's on catechism, recovering catechism. And part of the point that he makes there, or one of the chief arguments that he makes in the book, is that one of the reasons catechism was lost is because it did become just Q&A. I ask the question, you say the answer, and I grade you on whether or not, oh, you missed, no, it has a definite article in there, the is in there, rather than actually, the catechism is meant to, as a structured guide to have theological conversation and discovery. Mm-hmm. And so, like you were saying, talking with Ben, helping him to say, hey, actually, so, what is this? Okay, well, what is, you know, ask him, you know, turning him back onto it, answering his question with questions that he can answer. And all of a sudden he goes one thought to one thought to one thought to, he put some things together and he made a new thing for him, a new thought. And he was able to answer his own question way better than just you just kind of going blah.
Right. And to your point, you're so right that people hear catechism. And I think a lot of times what I've heard, I've actually heard it from a congregant recently. He said, I still struggle with that because I think Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
They associate Roman Catholicism with catechism. And I think it's, you know, studies that I've looked at recently, catechism goes back to the ancient church.
Oh yeah.
And catechism has a rich history.
They were called catechumens.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they were getting ready to become church members, right?
Exactly. So catechism is deeply entrenched in the ancient church and just the practice of worship in general.
That in reality, it is a classical method of teaching the theology of the Bible. When the, you know, we're fond of talking about how when the Westminster theologians, the Westminster divines, wrote the catechism and the larger and shorter catechism. The shorter catechism was for children, which is the one that seminary students have to memorize today, right? And so we kind of joke about that. But it's still, you know, but there's a reason why that's the middle school curriculum is focused on the shorter catechism.
Right.
Because it is. There's church members that I have at my church who are in their 70s or 80s who, when they were kids, when they were middle schoolers, they had to memorize. If you memorize the shorter catechism, you got a Bible.
Yeah.
Like that was a big deal. And there was a focus on that. And, I've also got a church member, who's, not in her 70s or 80s. She is a young mom, but her parents said, you know, they made it a rule that if you wanted to get your driver's license, you had to memorize the shorter catechism.
And so
you could do it in chunks. And, she said she was the baby of the family. So she got them to take 10 questions at a time is 107, if you don't know. And so, which was a lot easier than her other siblings had to go through. But that is another resource that you can use for the read section as well.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Add to that.
You were saying, like, just, you know, it's just blatant memory work. And you're absolutely right. I totally agree that you need to, it should be implemented in the sense of having theological dialogue. But I want to say, you know, we shouldn't be nervous about memory work. Memory work is good. You know, how many times do we hear God saying, remember, 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 remember? It's a constant theme that runs throughout Scripture. It is on us to remember. And I don't think, you know, I get a little, you know, I know the head knowledge versus heart knowledge, and I've used it, and I will continue to use it. I think it's helpful. But I don't think we always have to strain ourselves. Is it heart knowledge? Am I giving them heart knowledge? I think we can be comfortable with the fact that I'm giving them intellectual head knowledge as to the things of Scripture. And that's important. Maybe
yeah,
it's
well, and also,
time for that stuff to seep into the heart. But
if you want it to go into the heart, it's got to be in their head.
Right, exactly.
If there's nothing in the head, what's going to get into the heart?
Yeah.
And also,
yeah.
if you're not putting that into their head, then other stuff's going to go in their head, and that's what's going to go into their heart.
Right.
So, it's one of those problems where there was a real problem, but we came up with the wrong solution.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's like the pastor, I talked to once who just said, well, we all came from these churches that focused on the Bible, but nobody loved their neighbor. So we just don't focus on the Bible that much.
Right.
And it was I get granted real problem, but I don't think ditching the Bible or de-emphasizing the Scriptures is the answer there. I think the problem is that people didn't really know their Bible. And so, and so I think the idea here is that, you know, you have to supply the knowledge. And also I'll say this. I mean, I have, my oldest is 11 and, he's getting less excited about memory work. He's not as eager to do it. But the younger kids are, like you were talking about, like your kids, they love knowing stuff. They love saying what they know. Even if they know that you know they know it, they love to say it anyway because they're like, yeah. They're like Dory on Nemo. She's like, she's just going to keep saying, like, I know it, and I'm going to say it again because I know
right.
it. You know, and just, like, that's how they are. And then once they get to a certain age, they start transitioning. But that also means that's where you have to transition how you talk to them, how you dialogue with them. Now they're moving into a different stage where they want to think through things and challenge thoughts and to break things apart and have more. And that's a lot of fun. But the younger ones, they still love just saying it and be like, yeah, I nailed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they love getting prizes and just do remember just doing what you can to make it fun.
Yeah.
And so I think catechism is a great way as well to use that. We just do a variety of different things. So, for that. And so, but for family worship, again, I just want to highlight, like, we want to make sure, like, don't overwhelm yourself. If you're thinking about doing family worship, you don't have to do everything everyone else is doing. You don't have to do all the things that we've said on here. Sing, pray, read. Sing two songs. Read something out of the Bible. Read, if you got young kids, read the children's Bible. You know, read a story out of the children's Bible. Show them the picture. You know, ask them questions about the picture and just teach them and teach them about Jesus and then pray together. I mean, it can take 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'll also say on there's times where, okay, frequency, let's talk frequency and length. So, there are times, when there's plenty of times where we are just, I will say if we're banging on all cylinders normally, now I know that we're all locked down at home, but with our normal schedule, I usually have something on Tuesday night, something on Wednesday night. So on our normal family schedule, if we're banging on all cylinders, we're doing family worship 3 to 4 times a week, mm-hmm. max. Mm-hmm. Because we go to church on Sunday, so we don't do family worship on Sunday because we do morning and evening service. And then we have things going on Tuesday and Wednesday, so that means there's 3 or 4 other opportunities. I would tell people, look, if you're just starting out, don't try to do 7 nights of family worship. Do 1. No. Seriously. Like, say next week we're going to do Monday night, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do that again for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We're going to do 1 night, and then we'll bump it up to 2 nights. You know what I mean? Or it's just like, don't try to, if you try to do 5 nights, like, I mean, I think a stretch goal for a family just starting out is 3 nights.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just think it's a lot. You're asking a big change. And so I'm always asking, like, don't make the big change. Make the next reasonable change that's going to put you forward to your goal to become a more worshipful family. And so, you know, do that. And then also, there's some nights where it just went crazy. Time got away from you. Something broke in the house. You had to fix it. It's 8:30. The kids are just falling all over themselves and just fighting with each other. And you know what? Sing the doxology and send them to bed. All right. Yeah. Like that's we've done that. Like brief prayer, sing the doxology. Guys, I love you. Jesus loves you. Go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't feel guilty.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. In fact, I mentioned one of the things that we've been doing throughout all of this is I do a Thursday message and devotional, and my first one was on family worship, and I did say, you know, keep it simple and don't put pressure on yourself. Don't set yourself up for guilt down the road. And one of the things you said, and this is what we do, what you guys do, read, sing, pray. And one of the things I stressed in that devotional was the singing aspect. And you talked about it's going to be awkward. I think the most awkward part for people is going to be the singing, right?
Yeah. And, yes, definitely.
But there is, it's a different avenue of worship that once you do it, it lifts the heart up to God and the things of God in a way reading and praying don't. And I think I think getting us out of our comfort zone is really helpful for us, and especially for kids to see their parents singing and singing with joy. Even if your kids are not singing, I'll catch my littlest. She's a year old. She's just watching in awe and in fascination. Like, what is going on? Why are they singing? Right? I heard, I think it was Michael Horton that said, what we do is weird. It's odd. And it should be odd. And your kids should see the oddity of it and see the wonder of it. And I think singing is a great place to show this is what kind of sets us apart. It's a strange thing, but to revel in the strangeness, if you will.
Well, singing used to be a social engagement.
Right.
A social thing to do. And like you would actually, cause I mean, and talk about before the time where like professional music was releasing stuff or records or things like that. Like, they, you know, when a bunch of guys would get together, sometimes they would sing together. They would sing. Now they weren't singing worship songs,
right.
But they would sing together publicly with each other, just as in friendship and fun. That was a fun thing to do, was to sing songs together. Now we think, oh, no, only teenage girls do that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so I think, especially as men, I think that singing outside of a public worship service is something which is like, oh, I'm going to get my man card revoked. And I really just think it's just something that becomes deeply uncomfortable because it's not something we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But when But, you know, it's like my son is being raised, my 11-year-old and my 7-year-old son, they're both being raised seeing their dad sing and singing together in the context of their family. And so, you know, singing is not going to be something that's going to be foreign to them outside of the Sunday service.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that's when one of the sweetest things for me as the parent, watching the responses, the mommy and daddy belting it out with smiles on their face. Like you can just see it's seeping in for them, and they love it. They love seeing it. It's strange and awkward, but revel in the strangeness. We're called to be holy, and holy singing is something we're called to do. And I think it's a great example for your kids to see.
It's beautiful.
Go ahead.
It is beautiful. And so I think it's definitely one of those things where it's incredibly important for the identity of our family and who we're going to be. And it's always going to be imperfect. And so I want to share, just some personal experiences here, positive and, I won't say negative, but just different flavors of family worship in the Mabbitt household. So there was, trying to give specific examples where I've lost count now, especially as the kids have gotten older, of really great conversations where, it was funny. You talk about catechism. How do I glorify God? Right. That's one of the early questions. It's like question like four. How do I glorify God? And I was actually quizzing some of the other kids on it. I was talking to the 5 and 7-year-old, and I asked them the question, and the 2-year-old said, by loving him and doing what he commands.
Mm-hmm.
Our 2-year-old has some advanced, speaking skills. The boys didn't talk till they were like after 3, both of them. But the girls always talked early, and Hannah Mae has talked early. And so she talks in full, complete sentences. And she just said the answer, and we all just stared at her like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But she had heard her siblings answering the question. And then she took it. And then there was another time where Titus was, my 7-year-old was playing, and he was just playing off on his own. And he's just like, and he just starts talking out loud about theological stuff, thoughts he's having in his head. And he starts asking theological questions. He likes to sit upside down when he watches TV. And so he's upside down on the couch watching TV. And we talked about sin. And I asked one of the kids, not him, I was talking to a different kid. And I said, it wasn't family worship. I was like, what are we supposed to do with sin? And then Titus is on the TV upside down on the couch upside down watching TV and goes, I'm supposed to hate and forsake my sin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I didn't even know you were paying attention at all, not just in that moment, but when you were sitting in family worship. And so, those are just some of the positive moments of, their love for hymns. To also when they do pray, I mean, man, my 9-year-old daughter, Abigail, she will pray some of the most theologically rich prayers you've ever heard.
Wow.
And it is just amazing to hear these kids pray. And they're just, they're sincere, they're genuine, and it is an absolute delight.
Yeah.
And that's investing. You know, we've been doing this ever since Boaz, our oldest, was very young. So all the kids have been doing family worship to some degree or another. We've been on it or off. I mean, even recently, we went like a whole week. We didn't do family worship, you know, because we were just so caught up with everything else. We looked back at the week and went, man, we didn't do any family worship, and we missed it. And we said, okay, we're going to make sure we get it in this week. And then we fixed it. Now, there's this one particular moment in family worship. And this is worship with a large family. But really, I think when you ever get, especially above, over 2 kids, we were in the playroom, and I'm sitting down. Leslie's got, my wife has got one of the kids. I had one kid who was screaming and crying. I was leaning across, grabbing the leg of another child who was trying to get away. And then my wife had another kid and had one of the kids in her arms, and that kid was like yelling and crying. And I just started laughing, and my wife was just like, "Why are you laughing?" And I was like, "Cause this is insane."
Yeah.
I was like, "It could not get worse or more insane than this moment right now." Cause it is just, I'm either going to cry or laugh, and I'm choosing to laugh.
Yeah.
And there's moments when I've lost my patience. I've yelled at the kids where I've stormed out of the room because I was just so frustrated because they weren't listening and they're fighting with each other, not listening to me. And it's like, fine, you don't want to listen to me. I'm leaving the room. And I threw a little tantrum myself and I had to apologize. And we had to work it out. I mean, I think the whole idea is you're not engaging in theater. You're not engaging in pretense. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, your dad's a sinful human being just like you.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to worship it is a messy insanity,
mm-hmm.
which I know, because you have young kids.
Yeah. And, I don't have six of them.
Right. But you've got three and it's,
yeah.
And that age, it's not like I said, it's not like you can have these theological discourses with them.
Yeah.
But
it's true. Like, it's so funny. You can tell the mood. You can tell whether it's going to be good or not really quick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is going to be rough.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to slush through this one.
And it can be, and you don't know what it's going to be any given day.
Yeah.
One day you can think it's going to, oh, this is going to work. And all of a sudden it takes this corner and you're like, whoa. And so you get done and you're like, I can't believe that happened.
So can I ask you about timing? I think a lot of people ask, when do you do worship? So when do you guys do your family worship generally?
Okay, well,
am I jumping ahead?
No. Okay. That's right on. So we normally do ours after dinner. We're all over the place at dinner time. Sometimes we're at the table, sometimes we're not. When we're at the table, I actually like to, we have this book of, it's a collection of like just, it's all these stories from ancient times, ancient fairy tales and things. So it's got a bunch of stuff, through our homeschool. So the classical conversations program is called Echoes of History thing. And it's got all these little, it's got fairy tales and poems and all kinds of stuff in it. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I like to read those whenever I can. It's not every night we sit down at dinner and dad reads, a classical fairy tale and we all have a wonderful discussion.
Right.
But I do like to do that. And so when we're sitting down, I do look for the book and try to do that. So we'll eat, we'll do those things. And then usually after dinner, I'll just say the ideal plans never seem to work out, but we always shoot for like 7:30. That is what we want to do. Sometimes we have to start at 8 and we try to do it fast. Try to be done no later than 8:30. Cause I mean, we got a 2-year-old and she is done. Like, she's done like 2 hours ago. So, but usually it's after dinner.
Yeah.
For us, it's the last thing they do before they go to bed.
Really? Oh, okay.
Normally. Yeah. But people do it different. I know people who do it during dinner. I know, Leslie does, she does a morning devotion with the kids, at usually like 9 a.m. She does it with the older ones. So,
right.
So they do some things together as well. And that's actually more consistent because more controlled. She can do that every day. Whereas family worship is a lot tougher because we don't have as many pressing engagements in the morning as we do sometime in the evening.
Right.
Long answer, after dinner.
Yeah.
That's
what we do too.
Yeah.
I could see right before bed actually being helpful in the sense like, all right, it's bedtime, family worship time. And then that's the last thing of the day. You kind of close off the day with with worship. And I can see, because my kids have, you know, they're, especially my oldest, they, you know, I want to know what's going on. What's the pattern? Yeah. What's the pattern for the day? And, oh, okay. So 5 minutes left till, you know, bedtime, and we put on the 5 minute timer, and it's just like clockwork. So I could see that being really helpful, but we generally after dinner do it as well.
Well, and I think consistency is the key. And that's why, and that's why, like, it, you could do it in the morning. You could do it at lunch. You could do it at night. The idea is family worship. So a lot of times, you know, both parents are home at night and they're not home in the morning. So, I mean, you could do it in the morning. You could do it in the evening. Like, I think it's just, you got to pick your time. You got to pick your place, and you got to be realistic. And that's why I say, okay, just pick one day. If you've never done it before, don't say we're going to do it 3 days. Do it one day or no more than two. And then do that and talk with your spouse about how did that go? Do you like what we're doing? Should we try something else? What do you think? Yeah. You know, and talk, and especially if your kids are older where they can give in some good input, ask them what it, because the more invested they get, then, you know, then just the more they'll enjoy it. I will say, you know, as Presbyterians, we don't allow, dance, in our worship services.
Yeah.
I got to confess, there's some dancing going on at family worship time.
Yeah.
So, when we're singing hymns, you ain't going to keep that 2-year-old off the dance floor.
No,
so,
this is the same too.
Yeah. So they're, I'd say 2, 5, and 7-year-old. They're usually running around, bumping into each other, you know, dancing around. You're like, hey, whatever, man. So.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Go for it. So, but because this isn't a gathered assembly worship service. So you dance. You dance like,
do you dance?
Do I dance? No, I do not. I resist my inner Kevin Bacon, and I do not get footloose when we're singing hymns. Yeah, that's no.
Put it
no
up
one
on North Point sermons page.
No one needs to see that. So, I would get defrocked for that one. Not because just being at my home, like I would get defrocked for that. So, well, that's good. Okay, now just so real quick at the end, I just want to throw out some resources for people to check out. So I mentioned Donald Whitney's book on family worship. I mentioned Terry Johnson's book on family worship. That really is a one-stop shop. I would also say, if your church uses a hymnal, I mean, it's like $15, probably $20 maybe, to get a copy of that. Also, the website, it was down this last week, but, hymnary.org. Hymnary.org has every hymnal available electronically. So you can go on there and you can find any hymn you want, or you can just Google songs that you want to sing. But really, I mean, other than a Bible or your Sunday school material or whatever, like that's all you need to do family worship. Now, what was the book you were mentioning?
Yeah, A Neglected Grace, Family Worship in the Christian Home by Jason Helopoulos. I believe that's how you say it.
He will be forgiving for us mispronouncing his name. So
I think he was the assistant pastor for Kevin DeYoung when Kevin DeYoung was over at University Reformed in Michigan. But it's only 109 pages. I have it right here. 109 pages, really accessible. He gives in his appendix in the back, Appendix A and Appendix B, some sample family worship structures.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like you said, Terry Johnson has great ones in his book as well. But
yeah.
A really helpful guide there as well. So I think
These are all fantastic resources that will be super, super helpful. They're not these long tomes on theology. You know, it's, although everyone should read their tomes of theology. that's not what this is. These are short little books. They're meant to be very practical helps and aids, to help you get started, not to get overwhelmed.
Well, and, you know, I'm looking at the devotional additional helpful books. I won't go through the whole list, but a book you turned me on to was The Big Book of Questions, and Answers, a Family Devotional Guide to the Christian Faith, Sinclair Ferguson.
Yes.
That's been very helpful. I really like that book. And
yeah, we use that for our when a child is professing faith, wanting to take communion. That is in there in grade school. That's the book that I use for them to go through. But it is a great book to go through nonetheless. I've got people in my church going through that book right now. So yeah, so that's really great.
Yeah.
So those are some great resources to get you started. I'll have some show notes with links to all that stuff, as well. You can go to, North Point PCA, North Point with an E, PCA.org, and you can go, find the latest services and, stuff that Mason and the church is putting out there. You can, if you want to get our family worship guide, I do release a link through Twitter to that on my Twitter account, at eMabbitt or eMabbitt. You just find me there, or contact me. I can get you there. I can put you on a mailing list as well, that we use to put out our church materials if you're interested in that. But there are a lot of resources out there, and the whole point of this is just to talk about family worship and to encourage us in family worship. It's not about criticizing people and how they do it, but just clarifying that what we're doing on Sundays is assisted family worship for now. We will gather again one day in the covenanted assembly of the saints. But for now, we are worshiping together in our homes on Sunday, but also, Lord willing, worshiping together in our as families throughout the rest of the week. And so that's and that is a blessed thing. And so if one of the results out of all this is that more people learn about and implement family worship as a part of the rhythms of their life, of their family life, then that is a blessed outcome. So, yeah, all right. You got anything else, man?
No, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's been awesome. So stay on the line and we will break from here.
Well, that is going to do it for episode 14, and that concludes this conversation with Mason Kiepel about family worship. I hope you enjoyed it, that it was informative and helpful for you. Thank you again for listening. If you'd like to reach out, if you have questions or comments about family worship or about the podcast, then you can reach me at eric@baileychurch.com. You can also go over to Mason's church's website, North Point with an E at the end, pca.org, and reach out to them over there. And also be sure to check out these show notes at therookiepastor.com. You'll see the link for this show, and we'll have all the links and all the resources that we mentioned here and to help you out as well. And that's going to do it for us today. So for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.